Today, I want to sort of recap a few things and then end on a topic that is unusual.
We like that.
Yeah. It's nice to get the brain fried a little bit, isn't it, with some stuff? And so I want to talk about non-creation. That's the title of this message. And we're going to build up to that to really try to understand why. And start out with Ron's question that he sent me. He said, you talked about being honest with yourself, and what do you mean by that? And this started with me a couple years ago with Dean. Dean kept hammering away, and saying, you know, find your honesty. And he wasn't talking about whether you're dishonest or not. It had nothing to do with the law or rules or any of that stuff. And I think this is what works for me, okay? When you have a question or when you're struggling or in turmoil or whatever, if you just ask yourself a question and just let it go, because we're so anxious. I want it now. I want to know now. Yeah. And this always works with me. The answer will come. If I ask myself a question, it'll like go into the storage banks. And like last night, I woke up for a couple hours, and truth was just downloading into me. And all of the stuff that I share comes from this download thing that's going on with me. It's been happening for years, ever since we decided to start this, because I remember I was so nervous when Tony would ask me to share, and I said, I haven't got anything to say. And and I think that's why people, you know, are attracted to it, because it doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't want to tell you about my life. I do a little bit, but you know, I've done enough of all that. I'm 61 years old, and it's just not that interesting to me anymore, you know, or to share it, right? I've done enough stuff. But when there's things that are applicable to what we're talking about, maybe now and then I'll tell a story or something about how that's applicable so you can relate to it. But what I just said, well, what's he mean? And what came back to me was, you can't hide from yourself. You really can never be dishonest with yourself. That's what it means. It's impossible, because you're there. You can't really pretend to not know. Do you know what I mean? You can't hide. Wherever you go, there you are. I mean, you're following yourself around. Yeah. And it's just like, so the question is, why would I want to be dishonest? Not, am I dishonest? Why would I want to be? So that was the question that came up, and it just created a purity about just the fact that I can't intentionally be dishonest anymore. I can't do it deliberately. It just doesn't happen. I just found it just, like, it took over me. It wasn't me trying to be honest anymore. It just took me over, and it doesn't mean I'm pure. It just means I just can't do it, and I don't have a reason to be. It just was silly. And so it sort of built into some things about it's more like, I guess, boy, using words, just you just sort of come into this sense of full maturity and awareness that you care about others so much that you just can't be dishonest with them. And sometimes it's not good, you know, to be honest with people, but maybe it just means you just shut up and don't say anything. I'm not saying you run around and tell people how their breath stinks or whatever, or did you just have gas or something? I don't know. I don't mean that. I'm just saying, it just slows you down. It just slows you way down. And you start to catch yourself. And I think the exercise we went through yesterday with these questions, once you try that, I know it seems sort of elementary with things, but Barb was, can I share what we were talking about a little bit? Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Oh, she said, shook her head no, but then she said, sure. She come in, she says, I'm a very angry person. And I said, well, somewhere behind that is a thought that's producing that. Anger just doesn't happen. Anger just doesn't come up from nowhere. There's something behind it that's creating this atmosphere of frustration. Something is. And we get so entangled in it that we just can't see that. We don't know what it is. So it just goes on and on and on, you know. And of course, she was talking about her and her mom. And one thing that helped me back when I used to do a lot of counseling is people would come in and say, man, my one brother just always is rubbing me the wrong way.
Is there a brother?
And the thing that floored me about what I was reading in one book about it, it says normally it's because you're really alike.
You're really alike.
Whoops. Ouch. Ouch. And that's just what we found out this morning, isn't it? This is what we're talking about this morning. It's just a lot of this stuff. So, what, you know, we've talked about some beautiful, amazing truth. And I call it absolute truth only because it's unusual. And, I mean, there's all kinds of truth out there, but there's subjective truth. And absolute truth isn't subjective at all. Absolute truth is just like saying nothing's ever out of order. That's universal. It's the same with everyone. It doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing. How could that ever be comprehended by a religious mind? How could a religious mind ever even entertain that thought that nothing's out of order? Because that's all that the church is doing, is barking about what's wrong with the world. And here you find out that the only thing wrong with the world is your world, the picture you have of the world. It's just yours. If you were back in a place where you couldn't communicate to anyone, you were on an island, and your memory was wiped out, you would be in perfect peace. Absolute perfect peace. Wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. You'd have no history to draw upon to judge anything with. You wouldn't be getting any news feeds from anywhere.
Thank goodness for that.
Now, just think about that. You know, Diane and I really quit watching the news for years because we just didn't process it very well. And so I said, well, let's just turn it off. Let's just not watch it, you know. And if it just frustrates you and causes you to worry or whatever, why put yourself through that? Why make it more difficult, you know? And so I don't know if that helps, Ron. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got it.
Yeah.
I was just being really intense last night when I was watching this show and I came up with that question.
So I think the other thing too about honesty is you don't have to figure stuff out. You don't have to know why something's going on. You know, you just, if there's no history, that means 10 seconds ago, back. Right? That's no history. There's no life there. It's just memory. And if you want to live by your memory, you know, and complain, and it's just like with Barb's talking, well, there's familiarity, and familiarity breeds contempt. I notice Diane and I sometimes fuss with each other. And I tell her, I says, well, let's let's pretend we love each other when we're out in public. Let's not fuss with each other, you know? Because she likes to run around behind me, you know, like a chicken stirring the chickens, you know, do this and don't do that. And I just look at her and say, leave me alone.
Somebody else does that too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we gotta take care of the men.
It's not awful. I'm not saying she's a very sweet lady, but she overfusses sometimes, and sometimes I don't want to be fussed at, you know. But anyway, I think something else that helps with this honesty is, you know, you're in the right place when there's peace and joy with you, and it brings a restful power. Not to do anything, but just the power to rest.
Yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. That's the only power you've got. Mm-hmm. You don't have power to control, but you do have the power to rest through investigation, through questioning. See? Mm-hmm. And this restful power really exposes this illusion of control. Of thinking somehow, because any anxiousness that comes from us comes from a desire to control everything. That's another absolute truth. It always works. That's what I mean by absolute truth. It just, you can always plug it in with everybody, every time, about everything. See, it's not subjective. Ron sent me a comment a couple days ago. I thought I'd read it to you. Is it okay if I read that comment? Okay, here we go. Ron's on the clock this morning. I was thinking about what I was sharing with you after your talk Friday night, and he said it. He started going through his mind, die to your dying, die to trying to create the image you think of how it should be. Die to it, let it go. Then the spontaneous life can flow through you as it wants to, as you, which is the true I. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Yeah. But whatever we need to let go of, most of the time there's a question or a thought that's behind it. See? And I never experienced it at the level of freedom and power that I have these last couple months. I'd say pretty much most of the time, you know, I'm a pretty calm guy. When we went through this big thing with our business, I just retreated and sort of pulled into my turtle shell and just observed, because there was nothing I could do anyways, as I've said many times. When the bank came over and took control of the business, they really sort of said, well, you can't really do anything. And that's, in 18 years, that's never been the case. So that was really, that was hard. There wasn't a lot of ego left there for it to be hurtful, because I trusted the people that had been with me 14 years. And so that was good. Otherwise, that probably wouldn't have been as easy. But I've got two great people that were there that we've got a good relationship with. And I'd sort of said to him, this is what's crazy, I think I'd said to him a few months before, why don't you take this damn thing and run it? You've been here long enough. Run this thing. You know, I'll leave you alone. I said, I'll leave you alone. Do it. And they did. They started doing it. And then lo and behold, it happened anyway. You know, and so... you know, I guess we can call that prophecy, but it was amazing. And I think that helped a lot. So anyways, quotes that you don't want to forget, okay, from the last couple days. This one probably is I'm still processing this one I'm going to read to you. But I know, all I know is I know it's true, okay? I know it's true. And that, a lot of times, again, that's to me what absolute truth is. It's something I don't understand, but I know it's true. And it says, I heard it somewhere. I wish I could remember where, but it doesn't matter. the fear of death and the fear of life are the same. And I remember when I read that, it just blew me away. I said, I've never heard anything like that before. And I've always been very inquisitive as a little boy. I always was wanting to experience the unusual and to go out, you know, and just venture away. You know, when I was 5 years old, my mom was a little nuts, you know. It wasn't bad nuts, but just clean your room and do this, always do this, do that, do this, you know. And she would holler at us all the time, you know. Not terrible, but just, Michael Nevins, you come home. And I didn't like it. So when I got off the bus, when I was a kindergartner, I would go hide in the bushes if she wasn't down there yet and wait for her to come down looking for me until she would leave. And I would take off. She couldn't find me. Guess what happened every time? I got my ass whooped from my daddy when he got home because they couldn't find me. I did it a lot. Because I didn't want to go home. So it got me in trouble. And I guess I'm just, anytime I hear something that's new to me that I've never heard before, I'm going to entertain it. I'm going to say, what is this strange word? That's all I can tell you, you know. And there's something about this. The fear of death and fear of life are the same because our definition of life isn't really right. You know, Dana was talking about it. We think it's 7 score and 2 or 10 or whatever. And that's really something that dies, right? That's something that dies in the end. Well, that's not life, that's really death. Well, that's my take on it. I think there's more there to it than that, you know, but that's sort of what I'm getting with that now. And I had a few things that were keys that, you know, I want you to remember. Is it any thought that comes to you that opposes a peaceful reality? Any thought that comes in and upsets your peace and rest will feel like stress, right? This is your indicator. This is your natural alarm clock. It doesn't mean it's bad if we just try to get rid of it, see, which is what we've been taught to do. It's what we've always done. It's just, well, I'm just going to get rid of it. I'm just going to divorce this person. It's a lot what it has to do with, instead of working with it, working it out, right? Or I'm just going to get rid of it. It's my problem. It's the time to question what's going on. What is creating the stress? We went through this morning with Barb. Thank you. Went through a little exercise already this morning with her and her mom, you know, because they're close. And there's always friction when you're close to somebody. It's always some. Yeah. Sometimes the closer you are, the more friction there is. You know, it just happens. So I thought this one was really, really good. And that is, the worst thing that can happen to you is a thought. That's really good news, isn't it? Isn't that wonderful news? That the worst thing that can happen to you is a thought? I mean, I've really been going through some health challenges, you know, the last year and a half, actually. We've let it squeak out a little bit, but I mean, here we are almost ready to retire, and I'm pushing my young wife around in a wheelchair. And I'm limping with one foot, you know, because I got one leg that is not, it's acting up. What the Lyme's does when you get that is it exasperates any weakness in your body. It goes in and takes advantage of it and blows it up. It could just be really minor because we've never had arthritis. And boom, we both have some pretty severe cases of arthritis now. And it's went down quite a bit for her, but not completely, where she had to quit doing massage. She lost her strength in her hands. She can rub you, but she can't do a good massage, a deep massage, you know, where it takes some energy. And that's starting to come back, you know, but still there's some limitations. And this right leg of mine, it'll just decide to start throbbing about 3 o'clock in the afternoon every day. It just starts woo, 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 you know, and I've got it gets so bad I have to take some pain medication for it. Because it drives me nuts. I'll lay in bed and it's going woo, woo. I can't go to sleep. It's not like it's unbearable. If it would be steady, maybe it'd be a little better, but it's like you're in the pulse room in the Starship Enterprise, you know, and it's going like this, and it just drives me nuts. But anyway, the worst thing that can happen to you is a thought. Man, that's good news, because I didn't believe that. I thought there was a lot worse things that could happen than a thought. But it's not the events that happen to us that is the problem. It's our thoughts about those events that create the problem. And so then the next one was the ultimate addiction is the addiction to our thinking. And all of these truths, you're either going to find them in I Am That, or the Diamond Sutra, okay? This isn't something Mike dreamed up, okay? Now, some of this stuff came to me. A lot of times this stuff will come to me in these downloads. Then I'll go a week later and I'll read it in a book. But there's no author here of anything. I am the author of nothing, okay? So I know people a lot of times say, I can't wait to meet you, and I'm so excited to meet you, and like you're special. I'm not special at all. I don't consider myself special. Sometimes I feel wore out, and if that's special, I guess then that's, I'll say that, you know, because just lay yourself out there, you know, to experience whatever so that this truth can become real. And I remember saying that, riding off one day on my motorcycle, you know, and at the time I still believed in God, and I just said, I don't care what happens to me, I just want to know the truth. I said, I don't care, I got nothing to lose. You know, this was my fourth business. The business we have now is my seventh one. This was my fourth business, and it was on its way down the tubes. And I was losing a marriage at the same time, so there wasn't much left for me to be excited about. And I just said, wow, I said, there isn't anything left, you know. And my family, if you go through a divorce, you know, my family, you know, they thought I was a black sheep. They weren't even talking to me. And I mean, I'd come home and they'd be happy and to see me and stuff, but it was like, geez, you know, there he is. And what's so crazy about it is that my mom and dad just couldn't stand each other. They just always at each other all the time, you know. And it was so interesting, you know, anyway. So here's another great one, is our thoughts are harmless until we believe them.
Say that again.
Our thoughts are harmless until we believe them.
Yep.
And what happens is we form concepts, because the concepts we have, when we've talked about this a lot, about these concepts we develop that are belief systems, well, they're thought upon thought upon thought upon thought. That's why they're so hard to get rid of. Because to get down to the core thought that created that began the creation of these awful concepts we've had is hard to get to. That's why it's hard to come out of religion. Because where we started, we don't even remember. Especially, you know, I was baptized in the church I grew up in. I didn't know any better. I was taught as a little boy to walk the aisle in Vacation Bible School. You know, go up and say the sinner's prayer so you won't go. I said the sinner's prayer every night before I went to sleep. Now I lay me down to sleep, it's the sinner's prayer. You know, dear Jesus, you know, if I die before I wake, please take my soul. You know, it sounds Catholic. But that's sort of confession, isn't it? No, don't forget me. So I better clean up before I lay down to go to bed, you know. So, and I'll talk a little bit more why feelings are stressful, but stressful feelings are like a compassionate alarm clock. They're there for a reason. They aren't there because you're bad. Okay? I'm going to really go into that at the end, why I believe that, just to share that with you. Because we've been told all our lives that we're the author of our thoughts and we're responsible for our thoughts and all that stuff. It's not true. Absolutely not true. Amazing. So there's a silence that's deep within us that knows the way. Everyone walking on the face of the earth has somewhere deep within them this unconditional love. Everyone, somewhere. And out from a confused mind about that comes the hell and destruction we see in the world. Until we come back to this core and find out why our mind is confused, we'll suffer. And there's absolutely no reason for it at all. And I'm not saying I've been through all the worst things, you know, because everybody's personal story to them is the worst, you know. And I remember being in some meetings sometimes and sharing, and I'd be talking about how I'd suffered and went through this. And I mean, the people just couldn't wait till I shut up so they could tell their story. They didn't care about my story. They wanted to tell their story. And I didn't. I wanted them to shut up because I wanted to listen to my story. Because I suffered the most. Okay? It's all egocentric. Me, 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 you know? Crazy. So I'm not really saying that. I'm just saying it gets your attention. A stressful feeling gets your attention. It's a passionate alarm clock. It cares about you. But now, instead of just trying to get rid of it and thinking it's bad, we've learned how to investigate and to ask ourselves why. Just to ask ourselves. So simple. Very simple. So as we're led from this silence within, we realize that we're without a purpose and a plan. You don't need a purpose and a plan. Spontaneous life is always living itself through you. So as the plan is happening, it's being arranged. As you're on the road of the plan, it's being orchestrated. You can come up with, you can get an outline. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with an outline, but you might need to throw it in the trash. Look at it and then throw it in the trash, okay? That's all I'm saying, because it will judge you. Your outline will judge you. Huh?
That's good.
Somewhere, the outline's going to judge you. I'm just telling you. You know, so the less points you got, the better chance you are maybe getting through it. But somewhere, point nine, is going to nail you, okay? And then the first thing you're going to think is, what's wrong with me? Or what did I do wrong? Huh? That's why. It's not good, okay? That doesn't mean we don't plan. I mean, when I started hearing that all the time, I said, what the hell can I do? I own this business. You mean I can't have a plan? Nope. And as I started to, this is where I learned how to live the spontaneous life, was through this apparent failure in my business. And I had no control I didn't start it or stop it. I said, well, you might as well just relax because you got no control. And I started to see the spontaneity happening. And the guy that was set in charge from the bank over our business, when he was all done, he says, I don't know what's going on with you, Mike, but something's watching over you. He was amazed because he had never experienced it in 10 years of working with all the... He is a hired hand for banks to come in and clean up and make sure everything's being done correctly according to the bank rules and according to the contract we signed with the bank. And he usually is dealing with big messes normally. And ours was pretty squeaky clean for him. And then it turned out way better. We turned out way better shaped than we ever were in our history. We just went through 2 years of record sales. And we were this far from going bankrupt. Maybe this far. This far. I've been through that before. I thought, not again. I've been to hell already. Do I have to go again? Right? Really? So we suffer when we have a plan that argues with what is. You're only going to get what's in this moment forever. You're not going to get one thing more. So to reach out and try to make this big plan for something that might happen, I mean, I say go ahead, but you just better hang on to it loosely. You know, I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do. And I'm just telling you, hang on to it loosely. So it might never happen. Is it okay if it doesn't happen? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Is that okay? And if that's okay, then you've got peace. See? Then you have peace. Then whether it happens or not, it's okay. I know we went back when the dinar thing was crazy, you know, why a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon, and I can't say I didn't. I bought a little bit of it, you know, but everybody was all excited about it, you know. Well, I think I got some 5 years ago and I tucked it away in the safe and I forgot all about it. So if something happens, fine. If it doesn't, fine. But I know it's worth about 20% less than what I paid for it. So I'm already in the hole. So nothing's happened yet and it's been 5 years. So I'm not expecting anything to happen. And guess what? It doesn't talk to me anymore. It isn't telling me something's wrong. What we now know is unconditional love or spontaneous life. Those are synonymous terms. Spontaneous life is unconditional love. That's a name for it. Spontaneous life does have a nature to it. It's never unkind. So that ought to be a red light. If something comes up where we want to be unkind, there's some thought behind it that's motivating it. Okay? It just isn't, I mean, I guess when you're around somebody and you've been with them a lot of times, but still there's something behind this little frustration we have with each other. Barb and I just went through it, you know? Just like my brother, you know, people bring up my brother, my hair stands up every time I talk about my brother. Every time. Now it's just standing up this far now, you know. It was clear up like this. You know. So when I get around him, I'm just like when I talk counseling, we talk about your emotional state and you've got a 1 to 10 meter. With my brother, I'm already walking around at a 9. So all you got to do is fart, and I'm over the 10, you know. He didn't have to do anything. He just farts, and wah! What'd you do, you know? Huh? Hate to admit it. There is a silence that's deep within you that knows the way. But if you have a plan, how could you hear it? How could it direct you? Because the plan's there, and it's telling you what to do. But if there's a silence within you that knows the way, how could it direct you? If this is staring at you? Because this is the way. See, this is my way. This is my plan. This is my idea of what life is, what it's going to be. But if life is spontaneous and unconditional, it means there's no rules. Unconditional love has no rules. It has no right or wrongs. It couldn't be. If it had some, even a little bit, it would be conditional. This is something that religion will never, ever, ever embrace. And it's something I know all of us in our group understand. All of us love the message of unconditional love. Now, I'm not saying we live there all the time, but we know it. Well, unconditional love can't have any rules, and a plan has rules. Hello? It's got an outline. Those are called rules. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I learned it the hard way. Probably the ultimate way. You've got a big business like that, a multi-million-dollar business that started from my wife being depressed. Started in the basement of our home. We just started selling these little lights, you know, for $20. That's how it started. Wasn't trying to build anything. Never said, I'm going to have this big business. I didn't have a plan this time. I never said I never had a plan, but this time I didn't have a plan. I said, well, let's just see what happens. We put a little rack up. I should have seen the sign I made. It was awful. I tried printing it out on my computer and taping them together and stringing it out. It was an orange print that was awful. The printers back then were terrible. I didn't even have enough money to go get one made, so I made one on my printer, put it up there, full spectrum light bulbs, you know. We put a couple things up there and screwed some light bulbs in, and we started selling them. And it helped people. And I'd put these light bulbs in our offices everywhere, and right away it helped us. Right away it helped with the seasonal affective disorder, because we had sunlight shining on us every day. And it went from that to multi-million dollar, 33 employee business in 20 years. It's crazy. And I always tell people I never, ever planned this. So it's a little easier to let go of. A little easier not to hang on to it so tight, you know, because I didn't do it anyway. It was pretty stress-free most of the time because of that. Because there wasn't a lot of pressure there to be successful. It just started happening. So we know unconditional love and spontaneous life. And our big mistake is we used to call it God. And if you've got a God, you're thinking he's in control somehow. And there's nothing out there that's in control. Spontaneous life is always flowing. And because it's only active in this second, there's nothing to control. And that's something that just blows our mind. There's nothing that needs to be controlled. It's way beyond the realm of thought. It doesn't exist within the realm of thought. That's how vast it is. That's how big it is. It's way beyond all of that. We've got to get out of our, as Walter Lanyon used to say all the time, you've got to get rid of your little pea brain, you know, and think somehow it's got to fit into my little mental plan that I've got, you know. We've got to let all that go and just enjoy what is. Every moment, it's foolproof. If you enjoy what is every moment, you'll always be satisfied. Always. Now, isn't that good? I'd love that. I'd like that.
Yeah,
I like being satisfied. You know, sometimes some things are more satisfying than others, but we won't go there, but I like being satisfied, you know. That meal, that lunch yesterday was really satisfying. It was good, and I didn't get sick afterwards. Now those cookies Carol brought made me sick. Sorry, Carol, because they're good. But I can't eat gluten, you know, but it's just like your friend said, I can't go to Olive Garden because I eat too many breadsticks, you know. Well, it's going to be hard for me not to eat breadsticks. So I'm glad we're going to the Native Grill.
And so you're
going to
have pizza instead?
Maybe gluten-free. They have gluten-free. Yeah. Well, I don't know if they do, but a lot of places do now. Now, I want to go in a little bit to start to talk a little bit more about this non-creation, just a little bit. But here's something that's hard for everybody. You know, and Gary and I have talked about this a little bit, and I think we're starting to come along with this a little better. I know Robert had a hard time with it, and some people have. When Gary was talking about Bruce and Dean and I once on a post, some people were barking about that I'm teaching there's no creator, and they didn't like it. And I'm sticking with it. So anyways, but we've been so immersed in the idea that there was some creator long, long ago that formed what we call life, that we've never considered the revelation that God was formed from the judgment of man. Gary's got a message, beautiful message on that. God was created by man. He spoke a year ago. It's beautiful. God was formed from the judgment of man. So in the beginning, when it said the foundation of the world was formed, right? God created man in his, or man created God in his own image. It's just the other way around.
Yeah.
Our idea of God, our projection of God is our own image. It's our own image. Just like our projection of the world is our projection of the world. Everybody's different. We've sort of thought everybody's the same because they got world news. They're on there telling us this is the world news. You know, this is it. And we believe it. But the world news isn't the same all around the world. It's different when you're in a different country. When I'm over in Hong Kong, you get the BBC. Well, their world news isn't the same as the United States world news. Sometimes, maybe. But guess what? There's 8 billion world news screens out there. And if there can't be 8 billion world or 8 billion truths, okay? But they all believe theirs is true. Swear theirs is true. This is the world. Look out for this. Watch for that. Be worried about this. Be aware of that. Blah, 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 blah. This is what's simple about this. And this is when I really got the revelation of what Jesus kept saying, is when I'm going to leave my world and return to the Father. He kept saying it over and over again. And he said, leave the cares of the world behind you. Don't judge by appearances. He said all those things. They all mean the same thing. Every one of those statements mean the same thing. Leave it behind you. Enjoy your spontaneous life. Enjoy what is. It's the only thing you can really, purely enjoy without any boundaries. It's the only thing you can really enjoy without any restrictions, without any plans to judge it. And I'm not telling people, this is why Gary keeps saying, people are going to say, I said, don't get a plan. I've never said that. I just said your plan will judge you. I didn't say that. Don't get one, but just be aware that if you hang on to it too tight, it's going to judge you. I've never seen anybody's 10-point plan turn out perfect. Okay? You get people go through plans and practice, and they're the perfect golfer. Look at Tiger Woods. He can barely make the Open anymore. You know, his plan ain't working anymore, is it? There's probably 100 things you can learn about making, coming up with a, how can there be 100 ways to have a perfect golf swing? Mine, I just got one. Go up there and swing. Try to hit that damn thing, you know? This world that was formed at the beginning of time. So at Genesis in chapter 1 was the beginning of time. Was the beginning of the foundation of our world. You never had a beginning. If you're never going to have an end, you could have never had a beginning. Those both have to be true. I don't want to just jump all over the word eternal, but eternal doesn't have a beginning. There's nothing that's forever. Forever can have a beginning, but we've been so taught that eternal life is something that's screwed on to our miserable life. Because everybody that believes in heaven believes their life is miserable. That's why they want to go there. My mom was saying, you know, when she was in the hospital after she had a stroke, well, I just hope Jesus remembers me. I've taught Sunday school all those years because she thought she was going to die. So she, you know, but everybody knows they're going to leave. But it wasn't time for her, apparently. So she's going to go teach some more Sunday school so she can stay longer. But that version, that's why I love that statement that life and death are the same. That picture of life is really death. It's not living. It's got fear with it, that I am going to cease to exist. And Jan wrote me stuff. Jan, everybody remember Jan McLaughlin? Gary, I think you know her. She's up in Ohio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She wrote something to me that was beautiful. So in Genesis, in the beginning, it was never about an omnipresent being outside of us creating anything. It was about the foundation of the world and the birth of the ego that is saying, I am God. I will have dominion over the earth. So I am creating the world in my image and likeness. And we're doing that today, folks. We're still doing that today. That's what that was all about. Amazing, isn't it? I've heard other people say that too. I'm not the only one that said that.
Can you repeat that? What did you say?
The account in Genesis in the beginning was never about an omnipresent being outside of us creating anything. It was about the foundation of the world and the birth of the ego that was saying, I am God and I will have dominion over the earth. So I'm creating the world in my image and likeness. Now, here's another synonymous statement in Scripture that says that same thing. Satan stands up and said, I will be like the Most High. Same thing. When you find these truths, you can start to find a lot of continuity even in Scripture. You can go through and see how it all glues together. Same thing with hell. When I first got, I can't ever really tell this, but I got the revelation of hell reading a little book from Jehovah's Witness. That'll get kicked out of any church. And it dropped out in front of me in an old bookstore when Diane and I were in Savannah looking for Walter Lanyon books that were out of print. And we'd find them because people didn't know what they were, so they were giving them away, you know. And out popped out this little weird-shaped blue book. And I started reading about their version of hell in there. And they were quoting the Bible. Mm-hmm. I went, huh? What? That's not the Jehovah's Bible? No, it's the Holy Bible. And they were laying out their description of hell, and it just overwhelmed me. And I started to get a whole bunch of download then on top of that. And it was the first time that's happened to me. We're sleeping in this bed, the window's open, listening to the ocean, and I'm underneath the sheets of my pillow between my wife and I recording what I'm hearing about hell, about how it's not real. Well, it's real, but it's totally different than what we thought it was. All right?
Yes.
We create hell.
Yes, yes, yes.
We're the ones that create hell, okay? And I got all done reading all the scriptures, and I come to Proverbs where it said, hell and destruction are never full because the eyes of man are never satisfied. Boom. There is hell. That's the purest picture of hell.
Yeah.
Now, are you satisfied? Are you at peace? Or are you stressed? Are you suffering? Okay, that's the question. And just start to examine the suffering part of stuff. You know, I don't think we've been taught how to do it correctly ever. I really don't. I think we've had some success to some degree. It's not like this is completely new to us. It shouldn't be. But now we've got some ideas and some specific things to help us. And I think once you sort of get these questions in your mind and you've worked through it a couple times, it'll start to become automatic. Because who wants to run around feeling stressful? Who wants to suffer? Just about everybody's hand went up except one or two, but maybe they're hedonists or something. Maybe they Gnostics. Maybe they'll let her whip them, you know, with her little whip or something, you know, yeah. Some of the most beautiful books you can read are philosophy. It's crazy. Socrates' dialogues are full of truth. Some of the deep Greek messages and stuff are amazing. I'm not saying everything. I'm just saying some of the nuggets are unbelievable, some of the statements that are made. Because the statement about life and death are the same came out of a philosophy book. Mm-hmm. Didn't come out of any scripture anywhere or any sacred writings. Albert Einstein was in his laboratory and said the distinction between the past, present, and the future doesn't exist. One of the most profound truths ever realized that I've had. Now I'm going to read a short dialogue that Nisargadatta had with a questioner. And he said to them, find out your real being. What am I? Find it out, he says. And this is what we're talking about by investigating. And the questioner says, I have a hard time understanding what I am. People ask that all the time. Why are we here? What's my purpose? And that's why I talk about these absolute truths and put them in that category, because they tend to leave you alone and not knowing what to do. That's why they sort of have to be realized, but then maybe just put on the shelf. It's true. There's no question it's absolutely true. No question about it. Not questioning that at all. It was exactly what Johanna said to me when I posted this Facebook post. It was beautiful. Everybody loved it, and she loved it. She says, I believe everything about this, but I need help. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about right there. I need help. And so this guy said, what am I? And Maharaj said, you must give yourself time to brood over these things. The old grooves must be erased in your brain without forming new ones. You must realize yourself as the immovable. There's spontaneous life. There's another name for spontaneous life. You are the immovable. You are the changeless. You are the fearless being that always was. Always was. That's why you could never have been created. You are that being that always was. This picture you've had about this far out God out here is really, in purest form, who you were before time began. That's a type of truth you can't ever get your brain around. But it's true. I believe that. I believe this. I really do. We had no beginning. Tony and a lot of them have said for decades, you know, you were never born and you'll never die. Over and over and over again. I said, well, that's great. But I never understood it. Not really. But I just say amen, you know. I'm never born. But you are beyond your mind. That's why it can't be comprehended. What you really are is beyond your mind. So no fears when this death happens, which is just a cessation of thoughts. You're still going to be there in some other type of dimension. And if we can't comprehend it with our mind, why worry about it? Why fuss over it? Be something way beyond what you can imagine. Way beyond thought. That's why Jesus said, take no thought. Because it just traps you. If you take thoughts and hold them, they trap you into this system of religion. And I know there isn't any of us that don't want out of that. We've all left that. So you are immovable, changeless, and fearless, a being that always was. Behind and beyond that which appears as movable, you are the silent witness of all that happens. Not a bitching witness. Silent witness. Not a complaining witness. Sorry, I should have said complaining. Forgive me. I said bitch. Sorry. Complaining. Whining witness. How about that? Whining. So the question comes in. Does it mean that I must give up all idea of an active life? Well, that's our question. And he says, not at all. There will be marriage. There will be children. There will be earning money to maintain a family. All this will happen in the natural course of events. For life must fulfill itself. There it is. Yeah. Maharaj said this a long time ago. Life must fulfill itself. Spontaneous life is all there is, and it must fulfill itself. It's not your job to fulfill it. Life must fulfill itself. You will go through it without resistance. If you don't want to suffer, you will. Right? You will go through it without resistance, being thankful for all things. Thankful. Not complaining, just a state of thankfulness. That's what's going through with no resistance, is just being thankful and not expecting anything. Wow. You will go through it without resistance, facing tasks as they come, attentive and thorough, both in small and big. But the general attitude will be of affectionate detachment, enormous goodwill without expectation of return, constant giving without asking. That's why we do these meetings and stuff. It's never about making money. It isn't about trying to get a profit or even to get back costs, because it never happens. Gary will tell you that. He said he wanted to give away his stuff, and somehow it happened for years. In marriage, you are neither the husband nor the wife. Now, boy, if that really sunk in, I think you'd get along better, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You are the love between the two. You are the clarity and kindness that makes everything orderly and happy. It may seem vague to you, but if you find your silence, you will find that the mystical is most practical, for it makes your life creatively happy. Your consciousness is raised to a higher dimension from which you see everything much clearer and with greater intensity. Now, if you're without stress, you can be so much more creative. You can be so much, have so much more liberty. Artists experience this all the time. They just lose themselves in their art. All time disappears. This is the spontaneous life. It's where you disappear and time is no more. Because mostly time is created by the idea of control and stress. I hate to say it, but we've got to live in it. We'd have no choice, right? There's clocks out there. But it sure is nice when you go somewhere, you go on a vacation somewhere, and you say, man, the time flew by. Huh? Isn't that a nice feeling? That's when you're yourself. So, he says, you see everything much more clearly and with greater intensity. You then realize that the person you became at birth and will cease to be at death is temporary. That you are not the sensual, emotional, and intellectual person gripped by desires and fears. Don't judge yourself. You're not that person that's gripped by desires and fears. That's not who you are. That's why you're gripped by desires and fears, because it's not natural. It's not natural to live that way. That's why it's troublesome. That's why it bothers you. That's why there's no peace, because it's not natural to you. So there's no condemnation, there's no guilt. If you have weird thoughts or any of that stuff, there's no guilt to take onto yourself. So what are you? You are the love and clarity that produces peace. So guess what? If you're not producing peace, something somewhere is awry up in here. Something's off up here. We found the source, right? Isn't that your big toes too big? Okay? Got nothing to do with what you think you might be. Does it because your hair isn't the right color? Whatever we come up with has nothing to do with any of that. We don't really understand that there's only life. If we did, we would know that it's not a God. It's not something or someone that's watching itself. If there was really a God, okay, if there really was and he was omnipresent, then he'd have to be watching himself, not do something or do something. He would. If there's something out there watching, and he's omnipresent, he'd have to be judging and watching himself. This is all our making. There is no being out there watching you, doing anything. There can't be a source outside of you when you are the life. I just got done telling you who you are, and everybody agreed with it. Everything is complete and contained within you. Everything. You're not needing anything. So you have the tools to know yourself. If you're all by yourself on a desert island, you have the tools to know yourself. And it's as simple as just inquiry. If you're not at peace, somewhere, someplace, there's a thought that you're hanging on to that's not in line with who you are. It's not in line with your natural self. It's that simple. That is simple. That's something we could go in and teach in grade school, and kids would understand this. They could understand this. Isn't that something? You could go all the way back. You could teach a little kid this. You could teach them that they're love. Instead of standing up for yourself, you know, and whatever it is we've been taught, you know. Since the beginning of time, people have been trying to change the world for better so they could be happy. But no one will stand up and say that it never worked.
It never worked. I'll stand up.
Good. Thank you.
No doubt.
You know why? Because it approaches the problem backwards. That's why. It approaches the problem backwards. We need to examine the mind so we can experience the end of suffering. That's the problem. This isn't the problem out here, guys. Let it go. You don't have to own this. It's not your world. What we see out here is the pictures of the billions of people in the world. This is their picture. Leave your world. Leave that world. And come home. Utopia, peace, comes from within you by you realizing who you are. It's all at home. Wherever you go, it's there. It's complete. Life is everything all the time. So when we don't complain, will be at peace about it. It doesn't mean that it won't knock you off your feet when some things come to you. It happens. But it's time to investigate, right? Okay, what is it that's bothering me? Why am I upset? Why am I suffering? This is a compassion alarm clock. Listen to it. So when we examine the mind, we can experience the end of suffering. And when we're in that sweet spot, you remember the sweet spot? Dana's a golfer. You ever hit the sweet spot in that golf ball?
A couple times.
Poof. It doesn't make very much noise, and it goes farther than it ever did. That's the sweet spot. I've done it once. It's amazing. That thing just sails, you know. I said, well, how do I do that again, you know? The sweet spot is when you're at peace and at joy all the time. Protect it. Protect it with your life. Because that is your life.
Yeah.
Protect that sweet spot with your life. It doesn't matter what you believe. I don't care what people believe. But protect your sweet spot. Be thankful for where you are. That's how we live in a peaceful realm. That's how we live in a peaceful world. The spontaneous life will begin to be experienced, and you'll start to see it doing its own thing. It's amazing. It's amazing. I've witnessed it. I've seen it firsthand. You can trust that. And that's the problem. We don't trust it. Because it seems somewhat irresponsible. The spontaneous life will begin to be experienced, and you will never have to live in stress again. Huh? I don't want that stress, I'm telling you. When I first heard that, I said, well, this is the place where there's the most stress. It's in New Zealand. And I thought it'd be the place where there'd be the least stress. But only because of the word, I'm making fun of it, you know, sorry. Just because the way he said it, I'm just, wow. I'm just going, man, that sounds bad. That sounds really bad, Pete. I don't want any of that. He looked at me like I was nuts, you know, and I said, man, we don't have that in the United States. We've got stress. We don't have stress. I think so. It sounded worse to me. All right? That's all I'm telling you. And that was our joke for the whole week when we were there. So keep me from that stress, Pete. I don't want any of that. In this timeless realm of reality, which is you, is what you are, there are never any intentions. Now, if you trust the spontaneous life, you felt it, your intentions choke it out. Your plan chokes it out. In this timeless realm of reality, there are no intentions that initiates anything. Because life is spontaneous, it is never right or wrong. Boy, that's, we really struggle with this right or wrong stuff still. Mm-hmm. This religious stuff is not, it's just lingering around. It's just a feeling, you know? It really is. It's just, we've just been around it so much. It's just strange. Life just is. And that's why loving what is unconditionally never will fail you. Loving what is unconditionally never will fail you. I wrote this on Facebook. This was back when we were working with Kay a little bit, and said we've been talking for a while about the reality that there's no such thing as a human being. So one of the most wonderful things you can realize is that what you really are is beyond thought. So any thought you could have about what you might be or become is all an illusion. Right? Again, we restrict ourselves down to living outside the spontaneous life because of our thoughts. What you really are is the presence of life itself that is all and in all, right in this moment. That's what we really are. Mm-hmm. That can never change. That will never change for you. That's where your peace is at. I'm going to finish with sort of a jolt, okay? Sort of like jolts, don't we? I like jolts. I like to shock you. Okay? We need to be shocked, right? Back into our right mind. When I first read this, it blew me away. And I think it was in I Am That. I read it so much, I don't go back and refer to it. I've got a lot of it in my memory now, you know, so I can't tell you where it's at. So you got to read 134 pages to find out where it is, okay? Sorry. I just never forgot it. I read this paragraph that had this phrase in it, and I stayed in that paragraph for a week. There was more in it than this, but this one statement made me so inquisitive and so amazed. I stayed there because I didn't get it. So you just let this, just file it away and let it speak to you. But we don't understand that you are not the creator of your own thoughts. Here's why it's so bad if you think you're the creator of your thoughts, because we'll spend our whole life defending them or condemning them instead of investigating. So we can either investigate or we can live in guilt and depression and arrogance. Because if they're my thoughts, they've got to be right. Right? Or if they're bad thoughts, I need to confess and go forward to the next altar call. Or whatever it is. That's how we've lived. We've got to admit, we've lived that way. It's old school. I'm hoping we've graduated beyond that a little bit, but we've never known that we aren't the creator of our thoughts. It's another mind-blowing truth that just goes way beyond comprehension. But guess what? You're not responsible. That should free you right there. You can look at it and say, you know, that's not true about me, or that's not true about my husband, or that's not true about my brother. If I want to be free from this thought of my brother that's tormenting me, I can't go to my brother and get freedom.
No.
It won't work. It'll get worse. I'm telling you. The last time I met with him, he wanted to fist fight me. And I never said anything ever to him that would have made him want to do that. But he got so mad at me that he went back to like grade school and wanted to fist fight me. And I looked over at him, I said, Mark, I said, if I could whip your ass, I'd feel bad about it. I wouldn't feel good about that. I don't want to hurt you. If I could. I'm not sure I could. He's a big boy. And I don't want to get my ass whipped either. I'm getting too old for that. This happened like just a year ago. 56-year-old man standing in my factory, in my office, telling me he's going to whip my ass. That's how arrogant he was. And I said, I'm not doing this. I'm not going there. And he would not leave the office. I said, Mark, you need to leave. You make me. I know.
Wow.
I know. You know what I had to do? Guess what I had to do? I had to call the police to get him to leave. He would not leave. He was going to fight me if I walked towards my door. And I wasn't going to do it. That was the last time I saw him. And there's been around since then of stuff. What's going on with my brother? What's wrong with him? He's just got a confused mind. That's all. It's not that deep within him he's bad. I've seen some good in him. I've seen love in him. I've seen it. That's what I'm going to hold on to. I've seen what I want for my life. If I don't see it in him, I won't experience it. Obviously. If I'm holding a little bit of something up there like this that isn't in line with what I want to enjoy, that little thought will torture me. That's how simple this all is. Let it go. Realize, If keeping that thought, how do I feel if I hang on to that thought? I don't feel good. I feel awful. I feel upset. Let it go. Just let it go. Watch it fly away. My grandma used to do this. We'd get together and talk because she short-term memory was going, but she'd go to say something and she goes, there it goes. And she'd do this and then it would come back. Remember, she'd do that all the time.
Cute.
Yep. It would come back about 5 minutes later. So, oh, there it is. So she'd just say, it's floating away, and here it comes back, you know. Let that stuff float away. And when it comes back, say, you know, I really don't agree with you. I really don't agree with you. And this is what's happened with me. My mind is really, really quieted down over the last month since I started doing these simple little things. I never thought that something would be so practical. We've been talking so airy and fluffy and all these crazy truths so much that it's a lot of it's just become intellectual. And I've seen it happen with some people that are brilliant. They're so brilliant that it's not got beyond their brain into their heart. Okay, these people I talked to you about that was friends of mine that I had to block. They got so arrogant and so overly corrective with the truth that I couldn't even be with them. It just smothered me. Just totally smothered me. And this one guy, he was doing it to everybody on Facebook. Just everybody. He wasn't just doing it with me. He was doing it with a whole bunch of my other friends. And it was just like, geez, what's he up to? What's this all about?
Ego.
Yeah, but he doesn't think it's his ego. That's the thing. And Ron, here's where your question comes back in, right? This is where we've got to be honest with ourselves right here. Realize the source is the ego. See? It's not who you are, though.
That's
see?
Right. Yeah.
That's not who you are. It's a foreign invader. So I'm going to finish with what Jan McLaughlin wrote to me. And the last time I met Jan, she was sitting out on our back porch crying and suffering. Way back, you know, I think 3 years ago, she sat with Lois Walbert. What's her last name? Fields. Lois Fields. Yeah, everybody, the women all got their maiden names up there, so I can't. I call her by her whole name. Anyways, Lois Fields was sitting out there with Jan and I, and we were trying to help her, and when we tried to help her, she got upset at us about it. And that's what happens when we are stuck. But she has come into one of the most portrayers of truth. It just shocks me. She's quite a portrayer of truth now. And I really wish she'd come around and hang out with us some more, because she wrote this. She said, "We are afraid to not exist. We know that death is not real. But the willingness to deny our existence will keep us in the motion of life. Everything we do is to prove that we exist to the extent of making our existence remembered. So after so-called death, we will still be there. Let's not make it real so we can fix it. Unconditional love is the only reality there is, and it doesn't need fixed."